Welcome back to the Doubters. This is Thursday, the 9th of April. And today we have another guest along. And my guest is my friend Kevin Olban. Say hello, Kevin.
Hello. Hi.
People on the recording, people who are watching, are only going to see who's speaking when we speak. So if I need you to speak, I'll get you to do that. So Kevin is joining us from beautiful Aylesford Priory over in Kent, and we've just been chatting. The sun's out this afternoon. It's a beautiful sunny afternoon, but we're all in lockdown, so we're all being good and staying in, aren't we? And not out there enjoying the sun. Right, so I'm going to introduce Kevin and introduce a little bit about the topic we're talking about, and then we're going to get into this topic. So right, how am I going to introduce you, Kevin? It's a little bit difficult, actually, because I really should be introducing you in a professional capacity, but I find that difficult to do because I don't really know you that way, because we're friends, right? But you are a priest. You are the provincial superior for the Order of Carmelites in Great Britain, which means you're quite important. Is that right? No, he's shaking his head. He's denying that. Not important at all. But you have the authority, the leadership for the administrative and spiritual direction of the order in the country. You also lecture at university on church history, and that's basically your professional background. But Kevin and I are friends, and I like to introduce people by how I connected with them. Here, so you and I connected because I've been attending retreats at Aylesford Priory in Kent for quite a long time, over 20 years. And you weren't there at the start. You, I don't know when you came, but you and I got friendly a few years ago. And I met you when I'd written my first book, actually. And you were really supportive around my first book, and you gave me a lot of encouragement about getting this book out there, which I was very nervous about. You were one of my early readers, and I've always really appreciated your encouragement and support. You've given me a lot of that. So Kevin and I, we meet up regularly, and we do a lot of eating, and we do a lot of philosophical discussions, and that's really the basis of our relationship. Food, that's basically our connection, isn't it? He's shaking his head, denying it all. So let me introduce. So is there anything by way of introduction that you want to add, Kevin, to that?
No, that's fine, Olivia. That's great. That's very good. I like the way you've kind of blended the two dimensions there.
Yeah, well, I blend the two dimensions because if I was to talk about church, the structure of church and what you do as a priest, I'd be clueless. I don't know. I'm really lost. All that stuff is lost on me. And I think that's why one of the reasons I really appreciate our friendship, because you've really given me a human side to that. The mystery of the church, which can be quite intimidating and quite daunting to someone who doesn't really understand it. So I've appreciated that. Thank you. But the topic Kevin and I are going to discuss today is that belief is not the antidote to doubt. And I'm going to give a little bit of a background to this discussion because and how we got into talking about this. So I coach on self-doubt. So when people come to me, I get them to doubt themselves. It's what I do as a coach. I get people to doubt themselves. Now, people do not want to doubt themselves. People are very resistant towards doubting themselves. It's not a comfortable or a nice place to be. And when I generally ask people what they want instead of doubt, because they always don't really want to doubt, they want something instead of doubt. They want to believe in themselves. They want to believe in something, or they want that kind of certainty. And I have a resistance towards that, and I've written about it in my book, and I've written about the states of certainty and belief. Basically, I've written about the fallacy of certainty, and I've written about what I've called the comfort of belief. So I've written this chapter called The Comfort of Belief. And the premise of this chapter is about how we are drawn to things, drawn towards beliefs through comfort. It's looking for comfort, and we can get drawn into beliefs through looking for comfort. That is the premise of the chapter. And I think the premise of the chapter, really, also what I'm trying to say is that we should question our beliefs. And anyway, Kevin, I got you to read this chapter for me to tell me what you thought about it, and you did, and you were very complimentary, as you always are about my writing. But you also challenged my perspective about the comfort of belief, and you said, well, belief doesn't bring you comfort. Belief brings you challenge. And at the time you said that, I don't think I was really in a place to listen to it, because I've just written this chapter based upon this thing and I didn't want to rewrite it. But I've been reflecting upon that ever since you spoke. And knowing, because I know who you are, that you know a thing or two about what it means to believe, that I really should be listening to you and taking your opinion on this. That's something that would be good for me to do. And so I have come round to it somewhat, but I just thought it would be a really good topic to talk about here, because I think actually what we're doing, we're coming from belief from two points of view here. And Kevin, you're frozen. Can you hear me? Where are we, Kevin? Where did you get to?
Well, you were talking about, I don't have any video, by the way.
Yeah, that's okay. Let's leave it without the video and we can just, because we can hear you quite well.
Good. I was just reflecting there on what you were saying about belief in yourself, doubt, and the point you were making there about that, I suppose we might say, if you have an absolute belief in yourself and there is no room for doubting yourself, that can be quite an unhealthy thing. That can lead you into extreme situations. But my point, I suppose, was that belief isn't always about belief in yourself. It can be a belief in something or someone outside yourself, which kind of provides a challenge. It provides another way of looking at things that you relate to, but it doesn't start with you. And I think the reason for this move, if you like, or this sort of, in some people's cases, the reason why they have such a strong belief in themselves is that they find the ways that belief is portrayed outside somewhat improbable, somewhat difficult. How can they believe in someone or something? And I've got here, I'm reminded here of this lovely quote from Alice Through the Looking Glass. And the Queen says to Alice, I'm just 101, 5 months and a day. I can't believe that, said Alice. Can't you, said the Queen in a pitying tone. Try again. Draw a long breath and shut your eyes. Alice laughed. There's no use trying, she said. One can't believe impossible things. I dare say you haven't had much practice, said the Queen. When I was your age, I always did it for half an hour a day. Why, sometimes I've believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast. And I suppose what I'm saying there is there's a bit of a tendency, maybe, to think of belief as believing impossible things before breakfast. And you talked there about the mystery of the church and how possibly it all sounds very improbable and not very relevant. And I suppose in that kind of reaction, you're forced back to, well, what am I going to believe in? If I can't believe in anything outside myself, because it's all ridiculous and somewhat silly to believe these things, then I've got to believe in something. And I suppose that my point of view would be that it's not something which is outside you. It's something which is within you, but it's not you. And I think it's very clear to see this at the moment in the crisis that we're living through. The number of people who are responding to something within them that wants to be of service to others, possibly something that you wouldn't have done, something which is a bit risky even. You'd rather be safe than offer yourself in this way. But it's something that kind of drives you to say, I've got to look beyond myself. I've got to be engaged with something beyond myself. And that, to me, is the beginning of this idea of I am not the sum total of all the possible approaches and solutions and opinions that one might have. So that's why I find belief challenging and not a comfort. It only becomes a comfort if you're taking refuge in the six impossible things before breakfast. And there you're saying, well, I don't need to think anymore because I just believe in these impossible things. Whereas belief, as I see it, is saying, here's a way of looking at reality. Here's a way of interpreting the world around me, which isn't all about me. It's about the world as well and what I can make of it. And that I'm trying not to be selfish, if you like, trying not to rely entirely on myself, but also using the information and the experiences I have from the outside world to question what I do, to provide that element of self-doubt that you talk about very much in your work, which is very healthy, which is very healthy. But rather than being an antidote to doubt, belief is a stimulus to doubt.
Right, a stimulus to doubt.
Belief understood in that way, not believing six impossible things before breakfast.
Yeah. Wow, you said so much there that I could pick up on. Let's have a look at this. So what is the need to believe? I mean, what we're talking about here, I guess, is that there's a motivation, there's a desire, there's a need to believe something. Is that right?
Well, it depends what you get. Again, you mean by believe. There's a need to have a certain amount of self-confidence and believe in ourselves. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. But there's also a belief, I think, in humanity to think that I am not alone, that there are other people, maybe not many, but there are other people out there, and I have to engage with them in some way. I'm not just an entirely isolated individual. And how am I going to do that?
So for me, this is where the comfort angle comes in. And let me say a little bit more about my perspective on that, because we can maybe pick that apart a bit. Because I think in my book, what I wrote about, one of the aspects I wrote about is about the comfort of belief was about my alcoholism. And I wrote about alcoholism as a belief system, because of course I'm a recovering alcoholic. I've been sober for 21 years now, and sobriety is a way of life for me. But when I was drinking, I had complete and utter faith in alcohol and in the bottle, and that's what it was about, really. I was looking for something. I was looking for something beyond myself. I was so dissatisfied with what was going on within myself that I needed something beyond myself. And I found that comfort in alcohol, right? And of course, we know that that is a false belief, but nevertheless, it was that desire to believe. And that desire to believe took me into this area where I found some kind of comfort and connection. Yes, that was a false comfort and connection, and it led me down a path that I didn't really want to go down in the end, but nevertheless, that was what I was looking for. So there, for me, it's something about, and you talked about, well, we don't want to feel like we're alone in this world. We need to believe in something outside ourselves, in humanity, because if we're alone, then that's a very, that's a very difficult place to be.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. I mean, I think you're right when you say that it was a false belief. It was a delusion.
Yeah.
And of course, some people think that other systems are delusions as well.
Yes.
Richard Dawkins' book is called The God Delusion.
Yes.
And I suppose the thing is that, you know, the obvious question that you would ask is, well, where did that false belief lead you?
Yeah.
And you and I know where it leads people. And there is, I suppose, an idea that our beliefs can be a form of self-medication.
self-medication.
Yeah, because you were using alcohol as a way of comforting yourself and avoiding maybe some of the issues that were within, and addicts, and we all do that to a certain extent, I suppose. But it's precisely when it ceases to become a comfort and a medication that it really does become then a challenge, and it's authentic belief. It's a belief that is in something worth pursuing, because it's not something just to make me feel better or to apparently solve a problem or to avoid facing up to certain issues. It's drawing us out of ourselves.
Yeah. And I think, so the other point I made within that chapter was about how the treatment or the recovery from alcoholism, which I found for the 12-step program, which I know, Kevin, you're a great advocate of as well. And really, that is another belief system. And the belief system that you find in the 12 steps, for me, was about replacing that belief that I had in alcohol. So what we're given in the 12 steps or guided towards is a belief in a power greater than ourselves. And now the 12-step programs are full of atheists and people who don't believe in agnostics. I think I would class myself as an agnostic. But see, it is about believing in something else, believing in something else. And so for that belief for me was something which had to develop over a period of time. It wasn't something that just happened just like that. But see, my belief in alcohol is that every time I picked up a drink, I believed it would make life better for me, despite the fact that it didn't. But my 12-step program, which is a spiritual way of life, is my belief in this power greater than me, which I can't really define, and I don't really try to define because I don't really find that helpful. But basically, that's a belief that, so what I brought that down to is a belief that, or a trust that whatever happens in life, I'm going to be okay. But you know, see, that belief is a challenge to me, because I don't, you know, I have to kind of renew that belief on a very, very, very regular basis, because that's not my natural state of being, if you like, to trust that whatever happens, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to have the resources I need. Everything's going to pan out, you know, exactly as it should or whatever. I don't really believe in destiny or law of attraction or things like that. But I think that's what I think that's what I understood when you talk about belief being a challenge. So it's about really renewing that belief all the time, or checking in with that belief all the time, and also growing with that belief, because where I was, you know, maybe a month ago with this is not going to maybe carry me forward in 3 months' time, but with the changing circumstances of the world. Does that make sense, Kevin?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, belief isn't about... it's not about believing six impossible things before breakfast, and it's not having a fixed system. Belief changes your understanding of what you believe in and how it might influence you, matures with you, just like we mature physically and emotionally and intellectually, we mature spiritually as well. And that the reference, the engagement that we have with that something which is outside us is something which is changing as we're changing and through our experiences. And I suppose I would also say that it's not an immediate kind of giving someone belief. You have to kind of work at it, if you like. You have to be open to it. And the really difficult thing to be open to is where belief takes you out of your comfort zone. The alcoholic's belief in alcohol is a false belief, because it keeps them in the comfort zone, they think, anyway. It's, yeah. It's also chemical as well, so it's kind of clouding your normal neurological reactions and appreciation. And the belief in something outside yourself has to be seen with a great deal of clarity, and it also has to be seen in terms of, it does not make me comfortable. And when it starts to make me comfortable, then we're slipping into false belief.
How does this work for you, being obviously somebody who operates and your life is within a belief system, isn't it? The church, is it a belief system?
Well, the church isn't a belief system. The church is a vehicle, if you like, for propagating or promoting certain values, I suppose. Each person has their own belief system. Some of it is shared. Some of my beliefs are very common beliefs. Other beliefs I might have are not expressed in the same way as other people. So it's also a personal response. It's not just, again, I think people think that the church is some sort of monolithic kind of ideological organization and everyone has to believe the same thing. It's not.
Is it not that then? I thought if you joined an order, you had to believe certain things to be in that order. Is that not correct?
No.
My ignorance.
No. It's not a club. It's not the golf club where you have to join, where you have to obey the rules. Nor is it the Communist Party either.
But you have to. You need to believe certain things to be.
But I need to, not because anyone tells me.
Because you do.
I think people ascribe far much power to the church. Much, much, much more power than it actually has.
Right.
But that's kind of a bit of a red herring, if I may say. I don't think that's kind of relevant to what we're doing today, because I think that it's a really important thing that you bring up, of the necessity, if you like, in a healthy approach to the world and the way that we look at our reactions and the way we plan our behavior, if you like, what we're going to do, how we're going to behave, what we're going to say, rather than just going blindly on with a total confidence and a total assumption that we are always right. Yeah. The self-doubt comes in to say, well, wait a minute, maybe let's look outside this and say, what if the opposite were true? What difference would that make to my reaction? Am I necessarily right? Am I always filled with that belief in myself that excludes any other kind of external perspective helping me to correct, if you like, or rebalance my reactions and my behavior? Because left unchecked, it can lead us into very extreme positions if we are absolutely convinced of our own rightness and our own point of view, if you want to put it that way. So, and I think that, you know, there are different, I'm not here to sell the church in any way. There are things, as you quite rightly mentioned, for example, in the 12 steps, it's left very vague, belief in a higher power, however we want to understand that. But that's simply saying to me, there is something outside yourself and you need to take notice of that, because it can help you to stop becoming totally self-absorbed with your own point of view. And when you do become totally self-absorbed, that can lead you into a difficult situation. You're totally convinced that the next drink is the one that's going to change everything. And if you didn't have that total confidence that that drink wasn't going to change anything, then maybe you wouldn't drink it. Maybe you'd say, well, maybe there's another way of looking at this and I don't need drink to bring me whatever I'm looking for. There's another way of doing it.
Yeah, and I think there is something about that kind of delusion and the comfort and seeking that kind of comfort, an escape, really. So it wasn't really comfort, it was escape. It was escape from me and from that kind of condition you talked about, just being totally self-absorbed, actually, which is just, you know, that's kind of the alcoholic condition. I really like how you talked about the about how the church is promoting values, and that makes more sense to me. And, you know, and I kind of relate this to the work I do, and I'm relating this as we're talking about this to my work around self-doubt, because what I do is when people come to me to coaching is I invite them to explore self-doubt. Where are they doubting themselves? And we find out, we learn so much from that information. It's about where that information leads us and what it gives us a window on. And we work out underneath there what the underlying beliefs are about life, which are things that, you know, often we've brought along with us since childhood, the way we view the world. And we get to pick those apart and question those beliefs. So the self-doubt I invite people to do is a way of questioning their underlying beliefs, which could be leading them in directions they don't want to do, they don't want to go into. And then really what often comes out of that, what we often touch on, are deeply held values that people have. But when we touch on those kind of deeply held values, it's like they're not the things that to be questioned in a way. Those are the things that are almost to be served, because that's a really, I see that as a really integral part of who this person is in front of me and what they can bring to the world. Because of those values, when we touch on them, I'm thinking about some work I've particularly done in the last week, and two clients I'm working with at the moment. One is about compassion and another is about inclusion. And it's just like deeply held, really emotional stuff. Like, but it feels really important to who this person is and what they can bring out to the world. But then, of course, you know, if they're going to go out and operate from these values, then that's going to be a challenge for them. So those values are going to get questioned by their development, their growth, what's going on in the world, and how can I bring this to the world. So that's kind of how I relate this discussion to my work now. Does that make sense, Kevin?
Oh yes, very much. I think that values are at the heart of this, because they're kind of the touchstone or the ruler by which we can measure the authentic nature of our response. And of course, there can be mistaken values as well. Mm-hmm. If my value is to earn as much money for myself and to ignore the welfare of absolutely everybody, then it's a value, but it's
these
not
people
a very,
don't tend to come to coaching with me. I'm not sure why.
No, but it's not a very attractive value.
No, exactly.
So that you've got to distinguish there. And I would say again, the values that we most treasure, and you mentioned their compassion, for example, is precisely something which takes us outside ourselves. Compassion is sharing in the suffering and emotions of someone else. Yes. And not just looking at things from our point of view, but looking at it from someone else's point of view.
And there is little more challenging than that, especially
in these circumstances,
because there is so much suffering, isn't there? And to have that compassion, to have that level of compassion, is a real challenge to live with, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, that's a very important point indeed. And in a certain sense, our belief system is not about the six impossible things. It's about how are we going to put our values into practice? What's the kind of the configuration of those values? And their kind of relative weight and priority, because sometimes we have conflicting values.
Yes.
And sometimes we have some values are more important than other values, maybe. Yeah. And how are we going to put that into practice? And that kind of gives us this, what I call this reading grid, or this interpretive framework of reality that we look at, and we can kind of make sense of what we're looking at according to the way we've got our value system.
And, your interpretive framework of reality, is that an actual thing?
Oh yes, because when we look at things, we interpret it. We don't actually look at reality as objective. It's always taken on board through all the filters of our experience and our intelligence and our emotions. So, I mean, all you've got to do is to ask two people to describe exactly the same scene, like an accident or something like that, or some crime. The police are faced with this every day, because they ask two people what happened and they get two entirely different accounts, because people look at things differently.
That interpretive framework of reality, I think, is what we end up looking at in the coaching and challenging. and then measuring that against the values almost, and then, you know, and then adjusting that as a way forward.
And you may go back to your original framework, if you like, but the fact that you've challenged it and questioned it,
yeah,
and maybe nuanced it and taken on board certain things you hadn't thought about before, and that's where the development comes in. You may have a basically healthy intuition, if you like, about reality and yeah, how you want to deal with it, but it's constantly being modified by looking at other possible reactions.
Lovely. Well, what I'm going to do now, I'm just looking at the time, and I'm going to invite responses from the people who are listening in to us here. And thank you. I just want to say thank you to everybody for signing back on after our initial issue with the record, with the session here. And I know Jay actually has got, I've invited him. We were discussing this week, and I've invited him to come on and make a contribution here. So, Jay, do you want to unmute yourself? You can uncamera yourself if you want to. Hi, Jay. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm good. I'm on a rooftop at the moment.
Wow, in Barcelona.
Yeah. I was just hiding in the shade. So, I think what came up in our coaching session this week was, what was kind of relevant to this week was my perception of what spirituality was, to live a spiritual life. And up until recently, my perspective of what a spiritual life was is to maintain Zen. It almost sounds quite strange, doesn't it? Like, fight to keep your Zen, which that in itself is a bit of a, what's the word, fallacy. And just being this Zen space and my, what I do to maintain that and the struggle I sort of have. Mm-hmm. And what I kind of realized recently through coaching is like, no, it's not that. It's everything. It's the muck. It's, you know, all the things that, all the challenges that you have, all the discomforts. And yeah, that was kind of my perspective. I think that was what was one of our points there.
Yeah.
Is there anything else I'm missing here?
No. That was basically it, really. Kevin, are you there? I wanted you to hear this perspective from Jay and tell us what you thought, because what Jay was saying is about his perception of what he thought a spiritual life was, which he thought was initially about maintaining this kind of serene, peaceful, Zen-like position, and the challenge that he found himself in with trying to seek that, but then just fairly recently coming round to an idea of spirituality, is realizing actually no, it's not about that. It's about accepting the whole of life as it is. And living within that, which of course requires a different challenge. I wonder if you can say something about that, Kevin.
Oh yes, no, I would quite agree with that. And I think that, again, different forms of spirituality can suit us at different periods in our lives. Mm-hmm. And so kind of the pursuit of interior calm and peace, maybe it's something we should always be pursuing in a certain sense, but that doesn't exclude the reality that's going on outside us necessarily. And, you know, I think it's exactly what I was saying, that our experiences then teach us and help us to see how we need to develop. But that seems to me entirely normal, if you like, in anyone's spiritual development. Mm.
Yeah, that looks like a normal place to get to. It's like, realizing that it's not about. So I think there's that quote, isn't there, that serenity is not freedom from the storm, it's freedom within the storm. And that's like a concept of spirituality. And I know certainly for myself, this was like a milestone to get to this understanding, because it was almost like I was placing an expectation upon myself to be this serene, calm, Zen, peaceful type person. And trying to achieve that state, which is, maybe achievable in small parts, but not really sustainable, if you like.
Mm. It's very easy to get. Sorry, I just cut you off.
Yeah, no, go on, please.
No, I say, I see how easy it is to get caught up in the framework and the modelling and the, you know, the steps and stuff. Because you look at someone who you perceive to be in a certain spiritual place,
yeah,
and then you look and you go, oh, what are they doing? And if you're not doing that, and it's difficult or it doesn't resonate with you, you kind of can get stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I talk about comparing our insides with other people's outsides, you know, so comparing our, the confusion of our inner world, which is like the human experience, which of course we're familiar with because it's going on inside of us. And then looking at somebody else and thinking, yeah, they look like they've got it all together. They look calm and serene and they know what they're doing, but actually they're feeling exactly the same as you are because we've all got this, you know, crazy human mind. Yeah. Even you have bad days, don't you, Kevin?
It's the phenomenon of the duck on the pond.
Yes.
It looks so calm and serene, but it's paddling away like hell underneath.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've got a few other people on the call. Does anybody else want to come on while we're on the recording and maybe make any contributions, any observations that you've made, any questions, anything that might not be clear? I'm going to open it up for people to come on now if you want to. You can just unmute yourself and take your camera off if you want to, don't have to. I am also going to give space when we turn the recording off so we can carry on the discussion there with anybody. And I know, you know, that there's absolutely no pressure and no requirement for people to show themselves on the recording. You know, this space is as you want to take it. I can't see anybody else coming on, so maybe what we'll do is we'll finish up the recording and we'll have a bit of space afterwards for anybody who wants to come on after the recording. So I'll just finish up by saying, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been really great to have this discussion with you, and I've learned some stuff from it, and I'm actually going to enjoy listening back to it because I feel that my thinking has developed around my work, which is fantastic. You always help me to develop my thinking around my work, actually, and what I'm bringing to this stuff. So thank you for that. Is there anything you want to close off with just by saying, Kevin?
Well, no, just to say that I suppose the hardest thing to do for everybody is just to keep an open mind to possibilities we've never considered before. Mm. And to look at anything that life throws up to us as something which has the potential for helping us to appreciate. I've been talking to you offline about how the current crisis that we're going through in spirituality for people as well, that being isolated, being cut off from their church maybe, in a very difficult position, can also help us to look at what are the essentials in our lives. We don't have time in much of our lives to really look at what is the center of our actions. What are those values, if you like, that we're trying to live? But we need to be open to this all the time. And that's difficult because sometimes we will receive messages, if you like, which are uncomfortable. And it's learning to live with the discomfort as well. And it's not only living in the storm, it's also believing the storm will pass.
Yeah, yeah. Keeping some kind of hope. Hope is important, isn't it? I think hope is important. Yeah. Lovely. Thanks, Kevin. So it's funny you should say it. So next week, I've got another guest coming on who's a really good friend of mine and a mentor. And his name is Michael Leckie. And he is a, learning and development organizational design. And he's going to talk about leadership, actually. He's going to talk about perspective of leadership without knowing. So leading from a place of knowing nothing. So that's going to be an interesting discussion. And then following that, I'm going to have a little series about the strength of weakness, and I've got a couple of people coming on to talk about this from different aspects about how we can really find strength in our perceived weaknesses. And that's going to be really much along those lines, Kevin, that you were talking about there, about really going with that discomfort. So that's coming up in the next few weeks. Thanks everyone for being here today. Thanks to everyone who's listened to this recording, and I look forward to seeing you next week.